From Given, this is Purposing, the podcast that lifts the lid on how to run a truly purpose-driven business. I'm Becky Willen, and with the help of leaders at some of the world's most recognized brands, I'll be demystifying this often misunderstood topic into clear, actionable advice you can use in your own business. This week, I'm joined by Nigel Sullivan, Chief Sustainability and People Officer at Bupa. Currently leading their global push to put purpose at the heart of healthcare, Nigel is championing the intersection of human and planetary health to drive lasting impact in communities around the world. In this conversation, you'll hear how Bupa's purpose is transforming their approach to healthcare and guiding their global strategy, the role of sustainability in shaping Bupa's vision for people and planet, and the key actions they're taking to create lasting impact in both healthcare and the environment. But before all that, let's hear how an early fascination with nature and an unexpected career path led Nigel to act on his long-term passion for the planet. Growing up in Belfast, Nigel's interest in the natural world took root at an early age, sparked by the influence of a certain legendary broadcaster and naturalist.
I was absolutely enthralled by David Attenborough's programme Life on Earth in the 1970s. It was the way he communicated to the audience and the whole evolution of the planet and how important and the diversity of that. And I still am in wonder at nature.
That wonder led Nigel to study environmental science, a rare and emerging discipline at the time, driven by a deep desire to understand the planet better. But when it was time to make life decisions, he had to take a more practical route.
The university offered me a PhD opportunity. To be honest, I was getting married and I needed some money, so I thought I better get a job. So I couldn't get a job in the profession that I'd studied for. I just couldn't. And I ended up in what was personnel, became HR, and it's given me a good living, to be honest with you.
Nigel's connection to the environment remained something personal. But at Bupa, that personal passion started to blend into the professional. Bupa's CEO, Iñaki, noticed that same spark from all those years ago and encouraged Nigel to take the lead on the company's sustainability work.
He said to me, there's a light in your eyes that goes on when we talk about this topic. That is true. What we're doing to this beautiful planet that we're on is really continues to concern me and continues to drive me to do better and to do our part and my part to make a better world.
Now, years into that role, there's a sense of alignment, of finally getting to act on something that has always mattered. Stepping into a role that finally brought his passion and his profession together came with a powerful personal reflection.
My father always said to me, you know, why didn't you use that degree you had? I couldn't use it. You know, I wanted to, but he would have been so proud of me now to know that I was doing the environmental stuff. And I'm very grateful and very humbled to be doing this job. I care deeply about the people at Bupa and their futures. But the sustainability stuff, I will have the responsibility for the rest of my life, you know, so it doesn't go away.
So, Nigel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Becky.
So, I think Bupa will be a household name for lots of people, but I'm not sure that everyone knows everything you do and where in the world you do it. So, can we start by setting the scene and tell us a bit about the business behind the brand?
Okay, so Bupa has been going quite a while. UK listeners will know Bupa, I'm sure, but 70% of Bupa is outside the UK. So we turn over about 17 billion sterling. We employ about 100,000 people. We're in about 24 countries. And we are unique in the sense that we're the only company in the world that just does health insurance on the scale that we do it. And we also have provision assets as well, like dental practices and hospitals and clinics and care homes, etc. as well. So quite a scale, but very specialised in healthcare and health insurance.
So this is a conversation all about purpose. So let's start with the Bupa purpose. Now, again, we always talk about this as a management approach for profitably solving the problems of people and the planet. And getting that right needs two things. It needs a really clear, powerful articulation of your purpose, but it also needs people in the business to actually live it. So could you explain what the Bupa purpose is? And I guess perhaps more importantly, what does that really look like in practice?
Yeah, the Bupa purpose is longer, healthier, happier lives and making a better world. That's our purpose. Now, you know, I've worked for businesses where we've had to sort of augment the real purpose of the company with a purpose that people might relate to beyond creating shareholder value. We haven't had to do that. Bupa was set up from scratch with a purpose, and it doesn't have shareholders and that sort of thing. So it is in a unique position. So, and the purpose runs quite deep in the company. So yeah, that's our purpose, and we've had it for a long time.
And I think when I've heard you talk about the purpose before, you've talked about the two parts of that statement, sort of longer, happier lives and a better world. Can you unpack that a little bit more in terms of what does that really mean?
Yeah, it sounds great, you know, but it's quite difficult to measure. We are treating actually as almost two parts. And making a better world thing was quite a big thing for us. The longer, healthier, happier part of the purpose has been in place for quite a long time. We added on making a better world when Iñaki Ireño, our current CEO, took over in 2021. So that's quite a recent thing, you know, a very deliberate thing to underline sustainability as a key part of what we're doing, you know. So we do sometimes split the purpose in two to focus on what are, broadly speaking, healthcare related things, and then what are maybe more sustainability. But the big change that's happened in this year is that they're much more integrated together, actually. So there's a more of an integration between what's happening in the core business and, you know, what's happening on sustainability.
Mm-hmm. And I think what I really love about that example is, as you say, Bupa as a healthcare organization was set up with a really clear sense of purpose, and that purpose articulation has been around for a long time, but that doesn't mean that it can't evolve.
No. It was set up again. It was set up in 1947. So we've been around a while. Coming up to, you know, it's 80 years old in a few years time. And it was set up by philanthropists in the UK 2 years before the NHS. It was set up by Herbert Austin, who was Lord Nuffield. So those of you who know the Nuffield Hospital Group as well, that was sort of a Bupa sister company once upon a time. But I started my career in the car industry, and so Lord Austin also started the Jaguar Land Rover as well.
Wow, busy man.
He's bookended my career, frankly, you know, so that's another story.
Yeah. But I think you've mentioned this already, but Bupa isn't a listed business. You don't have shareholders, started by philanthropists. What difference does that make in terms of your ability to be a successful purpose-driven business? Do you feel, I mean, you're someone who's worked in private sector organizations of all kinds. Like, what difference does it make working in a Bupa?
It makes a big difference. It makes a big difference, and it makes no difference. So yeah, the way we try to run things. So all my previous career, I've been around a long time, 36 years now in business. The last 8 years I've been in Bupa, but prior to that, I've always been in listed companies. What we try to do, in a way, is reasonably simple. So we run the organization on a commercial basis, first and foremost. We govern the organization on a commercial basis. So our board, if we were listed, we'd probably be in the FTSE 30, and that we have a board to match that and a governance system to match that as well. And we're also regulated, you know, both in the financial services space and the clinical space. So we have to do things properly. And basically what we do is we run the company, in simplistic terms, we run the company to make a profit above the cost of capital. In simplistic terms, you would get more money putting your money into Bupa than you would by leaving it in a savings account or something like that. You know, so the return on investment is something that we measure and are very focused on. So that puts a financial discipline into the organization. It makes it commercial. It attracts people like me and lots of other people better than me who come from listed environments as well. So you've got that kind of, those kind of animals in the organization. But the difference is we don't have to pay a dividend, and all of the money that we generate above the cost of capital, we put into our purpose.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. Yeah.
I think it's fascinating because I guess for me, there's a subtle difference between what you're describing, which I guess you could argue is profit optimization versus profit maximization, because I think a purpose-driven organization isn't just about maximizing profits to redistribute and doing some kind of good stuff. It's about how you make that profit in the first place. And I think that you're able to do that in a really interesting way, but commercially run, profitable, ambitious about achieving scale and impact. So you've recently launched a new corporate strategy, which I think has really been driven by your purpose. And it'd be great to understand some of the biggest sort of strategic shifts that have resulted from having such a clear focus on purpose as the starting point.
Yeah. So look, it has taken us quite a while to get to the point where we really are fulfilling our purpose. And I wouldn't want to come across as we said, it is, that purpose can be a bit tricky. You know, that it's tricky, that purpose. It's not easy to fulfill it, you know, because it's not easy to measure it. You know, how do you know their people's lives are longer and happier, you know, and healthier? It's very difficult to measure that. But we're giving it a darn good try. So what we did was in 2021, we put together a strategy, which we call the Elephant Strategy. And the idea, there's a lot of KPIs and a lot of transformation programs in that strategy. But it was really that Bupa's an elephant, you know, but the elephant's been asleep. Let's wake the elephant up. Let's try and get the elephant to run. Because when an elephant runs, it's very, very difficult to stop. So we sort of finished that at the end of 2024, that 3-year strategy. We made an awful lot of progress as an organization. You mentioned the sort of balance of commercial. Our chairman often calls it our performance triangle is around financial performance, but also customer satisfaction and employee satisfaction. And so the elephant might be in a sort of gentle jog now. You know, I'm not sure if it's actually running, but it's definitely moving. And we decided in our sort of next phase, our next 3 years, which we embarked on at the beginning of this year, we've called it the savannah. So this is the elephant now, is in the savannah. It's in amongst all of the ecosystem, and it's actually an ecosystem engineer. So we see Bupa now, it's more muscular, you know, it's healthier, it can run, but also now it has a responsibility to be part of that ecosystem, that healthcare ecosystem, that society, and to fulfill its purpose through what it's doing. So we're taking another quite a big step towards fulfilling our purpose through the Savannah strategy. Just to say that some of the big healthcare trends that are going on are around like digital health. And the other thing is that the combination, the way that you connect funding and actual care, it's the provision of care itself, is really, really important. And that makes customers really sticky, you know, to your business. You know, if you can do that well and do it, you know, with a digital wrapper, that's sort of what we're pursuing all over the world. You know, we are growing and buying more provision assets. We are growing our customer base, and we are massively growing our digital offering, which we call Blua, which is remote healthcare and health plans and being able to access doctors through technology.
Can you talk about, I guess, what the strategy looks like in practice? What are the opportunity areas that Bupa is really pursuing driven by purpose? What does that look like in practice? What will that mean for sort of customers?
We call it 3x100. So, but that's to get 100 NPS and a net promoter score of 100, which our net promoter scores are very big. I used to work in telecoms and the net promoter scores were minus. Minus. So our net promoter scores are, you know, 60, 70, you know, that sort of space, you know. But we do, you know, there are some breast cancer pathways I've seen in the UK at the Cromwell Hospital where it is 100, you know, where a woman will be diagnosed and within a few days we will have her with a consultant, you know, so, you know, and being treated. And so it is possible. So we're setting our very, very high standard for ourselves there. The other one is 100 million customers. So we have about 70 million customers today. We are setting our sights high on that one. And that will be this big boost in digital will be one of the factors that I mentioned earlier. And then 100% what we call data density. Now, what that means is it's really important. You know, you heard people say data is the new gold and all the rest of it, but getting the data really clear so that your email address, your phone number, your whatever it might be, we need to have to service you properly. But then there's another bit, which is all the medical, all the clinical data. And bringing those two things together is this 100% data set. And we think that's a massive thing for us to be able to personalize the healthcare of our customers going forward, because people want personalization. They want participation in their own healthcare as well. So, and then we've set ourselves three emblematic projects. So these are the sort of proof points, if you like, to by the end of 27, we're going to change the face of mental health provision worldwide. So we're opening 200 mental health clinics from scratch. We are investing heavily in genomics and genomic profiling for people so that they can see and predict what their health's going to be, and we can have personalized health plans for them to deal with that. And then AI for clinicians, so that clinicians are able to spend the time that what they've been trained to do instead of admin and looking through records about Nigel's records about, you know, what he had last time, and letting AI do that work and write the notes up so that the clinician can spend time as a human being with the patient, putting all that training into real practice. So those are the three emblematic projects that go beyond that.
Yeah, yeah. I love the idea of these emblematic projects, especially in the context of the first part of your purpose statement, because they really feel like they bring to life longer, healthier, happier lives. And I guess what I'm curious about is almost to take a look behind the scenes in the strategy development process, because I'm sure, you know, lots of listeners will have either led or been involved in those sort of processes, often working with huge teams of management consultants. How did you make sure, how did you do it? How is it different? How did you make sure that this wasn't just a kind of post-rationalized idea?
Well, two things. We had the elephant thing, the previous 3 years, you know, and so this is an acceleration of that, you know. So it's, we haven't done a right angle turn or anything. We're accelerating. We've got very solid foundations. The elephant's running. We didn't use any management consultants at all in any of this. What we did was we have a very good strategy team internally, and we have our top 70, roughly, we call our strategic development forum. We involve them all in the development of the strategy. So they all of those people were involved. So these are all the country managers, the functional expertise, you know, quite senior people, and they're all very, very good. They all got involved in that. And that's what I think is what's made the difference. We had many, many meetings as the executive team. We spent ages and ages on it. We took it to the board in July last year. So we set ourselves some boundaries around, you know, what we thought the hypothesis were, to give it a kind of context. A big chunk of it is Blue, that digital offering I mentioned to you earlier, that got developed in the elephant era, and now it's accelerating and scaling into every single country that we're in the Savannah era. So some new stuff like the mental health, and some stuff that's just getting bigger and accelerating.
Yeah, brilliant. So let's double click on the sustainability part of this and the making a better world part of the purpose. I think you are also in the process of setting a new sustainability strategy. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So again, so I took on sustainability and we developed a sustainability strategy, which, you know, we had these missions, you know, around with an overall sort of mission zero. But the sustainability strategy has at its heart the intersection of human health and planetary health. We think that's where we can be most helpful to everybody, both our customers and also to society in general. So that's what we set out. So we had a series of missions around net zero and all the rest. It was very environmentally focused, very, very deliberately. So we then sort of went into the, well, what does better world look like? So we went through a process to sort of, this is where we've come from, this is where we want to go. We want to link it with the Savannah strategy. We want to keep the E, but develop the S in particular of ESG. Basically, we've again set ourselves three areas: people, community, and planet are the three areas. Again, we love KPIs and targets at Bupa. So this one's 25, 50, 70. So 25 million customers with more accessible healthcare products, 50 cities that where we're going to lean into in terms of improving them and their livability, and 75,000 hectares of nature regeneration. So those are broadly the three areas that we are focused on in Better World.
Yeah. And I think it is interesting you talk about the evolution of kind of one strategy to another on both the corporate strategy level, but also in terms of sustainability. And I do think it's really challenging to design and execute the perfect strategy in one go. And actually, in both cases, you know, from Elevant to Savannah and from the previous sustainability strategy to the one that you have now, it was all about setting the foundations and then being able to accelerate. And I guess going back to the ownership structure question, you know, not having shareholders means that you really can take a long view, perhaps take that time to see through a strategy, see it in two strategy leaps rather than just one. I think that's interesting.
So we term the money that's going into this as purpose-based spend. So the purpose-based spend is split between the three emblematics that I mentioned earlier and the better world. So that is hundreds of millions of pounds over the 3-year period. I mean, it's a serious amount of money because we don't have to pay that to shareholders.
Don't have to pay it to shareholders, but it is a real investment. It's not philanthropy. It's driving growth and scale and impact and long-term sustainable growth.
It is.
So, and I think you touched on this already, that the Bupa purpose can be a tricky thing to evaluate, but it's also, I think, tricky because it's incredibly ambitious in its intent. And I think one of the measures of how purpose-driven an organization really is the extent to which you really use your purpose to make decisions. And often that really comes down to how you manage trade-offs. So I don't know if there are any examples that spring to mind, but it would be great to see under the bonnet of any decisions that you've made where you feel actually that clarity of purpose has really helped manage trade-offs, perhaps not necessarily led you to a different decision, but perhaps led you to make that decision in a different way.
An example would be, I think last year we made a big investment. We're making a big investment in India. You know, so India's a big growing market for healthcare. One of the considerations in doing that was what impact would it have potentially on our science-based targets? And we did some analysis on that, you know, to see like, is there a headwind there that would be too much, you know, and would impact? And we satisfied ourselves that there wasn't, and there were mitigating factors we could look at. When we do acquisitions, you know, of hospitals and dental practices, etc., the environmental impact of those is in the process of the M&A. You know, it's part of the process.
Yeah, and I guess that probably wasn't the case, a few years ago before you...
No, it wasn't. It wasn't at all. No. And it's the other thing we've done is that this stuff's part of the incentive plans for the most senior people. So we've incentivized people to go after these targets, you know, and particularly in the environmental space, you know, and that's worked as well. Some companies do that, you know, but we've done that in a meaningful way, you know, so if you hit the targets, you'll get paid more.
Yeah. And I guess that does require you to feel really confident in your measurement and evaluation methodologies for all of these areas, which I guess on the environmental side is more quantifiable, I guess, than on the social side. So you talked about it being something that was particularly challenging. Do you think you're making progress on that?
Yeah, no, the environmental side was a challenge to begin with. I mean, that was... this is my early days. It's like, it seems like an age ago, but just trying to find out where all the carbon was at Bupa.
Yes. I mean,
we've 2,500 properties worldwide, you know. I mean, it was really difficult and we've become really good at it now. You know, we've put a bit of technology in to help us, but we have a dedicated sustainable finance team. They sit in the finance function, but they are dedicated to that and we've invested in that. I think on the social side, we're on a bit of a journey. It's true. We've decided, you know, this is what we're going to do. You know, we think that we think we're in nearly all of those 50 cities in some fashion, and we think we can make a meaningful impact there. What exactly that means in terms of the output of that, I'm not quite sure yet. What exactly the output will be from the regeneration. So we're finding our way on that one. So the regeneration, for example, we are as interested in the biodiversity impact of that as we are the carbon impact of that, if you know what I mean. It's more about biodiversity than it is about absorbing carbon. There's a win-win there to do both, obviously, but we're just working through like how localized is that versus how, you know, there's all sorts of ways to cut that particular cake, as you know, but we're on a journey and it's a great journey to be on, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. So on that note, can you give us a sense of where you'd like to see the business in, say, 5 years' time?
Yeah, I think 5 years' time we'll be bigger than we are today. You know, I think hopefully the growth momentum is there, sustainable growth. You know, there isn't one holy grail in all of this stuff, you know, to go for. But if one thing that would be really good to have and would be the closest, I think, to most parts of our purpose would be if you're a Bupa member, you have a healthcare plan that's personalised to you. That health plan would be sustainable because they talk about the four P's in health: prevention, participation, personalization, and prediction. And the digital element of that is much more sustainable than if you do the prevention stuff really well and do it digitally and personalized to you and you can participate in it. That means you will live a longer, happier, healthier life and you'll make a better world. So that would be us really fulfilling our purpose.
That's really inspiring. Nigel, thank you for being such a brilliant guest on Purposing.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Nigel. Loads of brilliant ideas there. So here are a few things that I've taken from the conversation. Bupa doesn't see purpose and profit as being in conflict. But I think a big part of this is the idea of optimizing profit rather than maximizing profit. Not every business has the same ownership structure as Bupa, but every business leader can adopt a profit optimization mindset. One of the reasons the new strategy feels both ambitious and robust and is already delivering results is because it was meaningfully co-created with Bupa's 70-strong leadership team, with no management consultants. In my experience, co-creation gets to better strategies that actually get executed, and this is a great example. Finally, Bupa's emblematic projects are really powerful. Not everyone might be able to remember all the details of the strategy, but they will be able to connect with the kind of big commitments Bupa's making in the field of genomics, AI, and mental health, especially when they're so connected to the corporate purpose. If you're setting a purpose-driven business strategy, what are your emblematic projects? I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you'd like more practical advice on building a purpose-driven business with brilliant insights from people like Nigel, download the Insider's Guide to Purpose at givenagency.com/thinking.